देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीर्वुत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्टिकी कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नन्दनाय च नन्दगोपकुमाराय गोविन्दाय नमो नमः.
रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 60 एंटाइटल्ड कृष्ण टीजर्स रुक्मिणी टेक्स्ट नंबर 55 एंड 56.
न त्वादृशीं प्रणयिनीं गृहिणीं गृहेषु पश्यामि माणिनियया स्वविवाहकाले प्राप्तान् नृपान्न विगणय्य रहो हरो मे प्रस्तापितो द्विजवुपश्रुतसत्कतस्य न त्वादृशीं प्रणयिनीं गृहिणीं गृहेषु पश्यामि माणिनियया स्वविवाहकाले प्राप्तान् नृपान्न विगणय्य रहो हरो मे प्रस्तापितो द्विजवुपश्रुतसत्कतस्य न त्वादृशीं प्रणयिनीं गृहिणीं गृहेषु पश्यामि माणिनियया स्वविवाहकाले प्राप्तान् नृपान्न विगणय्य रहो हरो मे प्रस्तापितो द्विजवुपश्रुतसत्कतस्य त्वादृशीं प्रणयिनीं गृहिणीं गृहेषु पश्यामि माणिनियया स्वविवाहकाले प्राप्तान् नृपान्न विगणय्य रहो हरो मे प्रस्तापितो द्विजवुपश्रुतसत्कतस्य न त्वादृशीं प्रणयिनीं गृहिणीं गृहेषु पश्यामि माणिनियया स्वविवाहकाले प्राप्तान् नृपान्न विगणय्य रहो हरो मे प्रस्तापितो द्विजवुपश्रुतसत्कतस्य न त्वादृशीं प्रणयिनीं गृहिणीं गृहेषु पश्यामि माणिनियया स्वविवाहकाले प्राप्तान् नृपान्न विगणय्य रहो हरे मे
Mataji.
Natvadrushim pranayinim grihinim griheshu. Pashyami mani niyaya swavivaha kale. Praptandrupanna viganaya raho haro me. Prastapito dvijavuparshuta satkatasya.
Word to word translation. Na, not, twadrushim, like you, pranayinim, loving, grihinim, wife, griheshu, in my residences, pashyami, do I see, manini, O respectful one, yaya, by whom, sva, of her own, vivaha, marriage, kale, at the time, praptan, arrived, nripan, kings, na viganaya, disregarding, raha, a confidential message, hara, the carrier, me, to me, prastapita, sent, vija, a brahmana, upashruta, overheard, sat, true, katasya, narrations about whom. Translation by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Translation: in all my palaces I can find no other wife as loving as you, O most respectful one. When you are to be married, you disregarded all the kings who had assembled to seek your hand, and simply because you had heard authentic accounts concerning me, you sent a brahmana to me with your confidential message. Because there's no purport, we'll go to the next verse. Bratur virupa karanam yudhi nirjitasya prodvaha parvani chatad vadam aksha goshtyam dukkam samuttam asaho asmad ayoga bhitya naivabravi kimapitena vayam jitaste. When your brother, who had been defeated in battle and then disfigured, was later killed during a gambling match on Aniruddha's wedding day, you felt unbearable grief. Yet out of fear of losing me, you spoke not a word. By this silence, you have conquered me. Purport. Here, Lord Krishna refers to an event that will be described in the next chapter. Thus, Krishna's talks with Rukmini must have taken place after the marriage of Aniruddha. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namavo Mishnupadaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Pashyati Deshatarine Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavranda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram 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 Hare Hare. So today is the most auspicious day of Rukmini Dwadashi, the appearance day of Rukmini Devi. So it is very nice that actually this chapter is just about to end. Is we are still on this chapter on the day of Rukmini Dwadashi. So in these verses, we are just, I think, these verses, Lord Krishna is recollecting how Rukmini Devi had taken a great risk when she was actually about to get married to Shishupal, and Rukmini Devi actually sent a letter through that Brahmana. Krishna is actually recollecting how Rukmini Devi had taken a great risk, and also Krishna is actually recollecting another incident which apparently comes in the next chapter, but because Sukadeva Goswami is not narrating these pastimes in a chronological manner, so although this chapter is the killing of Rukmini comes in the next chapter, but actually that incident took place before this particular incident of Krishna teasing Rukmini. So Krishna is recollecting this incident that when Rukmi was killed by Balram on the wedding day of Aniruddha, that time Rukmini Devi felt unbearable grief. Dukkam samuttam asaho. Samuttam asaho, that means like she fully experienced intolerable grief. But out of fear of being separated from Krishna, Rukmini Devi did not speak a single word. Rukmini Devi felt that if she had actually raised some opposition, if she had spoken, if she had raised some questions, why Balramji killed Rukmi, she felt that maybe Krishna might become angry and she may actually leave me. So out of fear of separation from Krishna, she actually tolerated that unbearable grief. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that Rukmini Devi showed only some sadness externally, although she was actually experiencing much more sadness. So she did not speak a single word, and Krishna is actually recollecting that, and Krishna is saying that, by the silence you have conquered me, naiva brapi kimapi tena vayam jitaste, na abravi, you did not speak at that time. So tena vayam jitaste, you have actually conquered me. So since many months back, and maybe in the early chapter 52, 53 chapters, since that time we have been discussing the glories of Rukmini Devi, and so many devotees, they spoke like so many realizations and thoughts on the whole episode of Krishna's marriage to Rukmini and also Krishna teasing Rukmini. So today also we'll just try to highlight some of the qualities, although you must have heard this many times, we'll try to discuss some of the qualities of Rukmini and some of the lessons from this, from these verses. So here Krishna is remembering how Rukmini Devi had taken a great risk by sending the letter through that Brahmana. So usually remembrance or memory is like, sometimes there are like advertisements, like there are some tonics to boost your memory or some medicines to boost your memory. But here Krishna is actually remembering this incident because of a deep sense of gratitude, which shows actually his deep soft-hearted nature. So in the case of the devotees, the memory is coming not because of certain physical ability of the brain or something, it is because of their deep sense of gratitude. So therefore they are actually able to remember the good things or the sacrifices which others have actually performed for them. So Krishna is also recollecting this incident. And especially we see in these verses that Krishna is saying that although you felt unbearable grief, but you actually suppressed your feelings and you did not speak a single word. Of course, when it is mentioned that Rukmini Devi did not speak a single word, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur said that she exhibited some sadness externally, although she was feeling more sadness. It is not in the sense that she was acting like a stone with no feelings. She exhibited some sadness. So Rupa Goswami also, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in one of the items of Sadhana Bhakti,
he mentions one of the items is that equilibrium in loss and gain. One has to be equipoised in loss and gain. And he gives a quotation. He says that when a person is overcome by lamentation and illusion, then in such a person's heart, remembrance of the Lord cannot take place. So, Rukmini Devi is neither exhibiting, is not like some kind of a stone, as if like she is not having any feelings. But at the same time, she was having great feelings, but for the sake of Krishna, for fear of separation from Krishna, she is actually suppressing those feelings. So a devotee naturally has feelings towards the family members, the near and dear ones. But he harmonizes those feelings and relations like with service to Krishna, with his relationship with Krishna. So in that sense, Rukmini Devi is actually suppressing her feelings. And we see like there are other examples. One particular example we see in the case of Shukadeva Goswami, how he also had great feelings, but he actually suppressed his feelings for the sake of service to a devotee. So it is described that in the Shukadeva Goswami, this incident comes later in the 10th canto in the 78th chapter. When Shukadeva Goswami was describing this pastime of Krishna killing Shalva and then later killing Dantavakra. So Krishna killed Shalva in Dwaraka, and then at that time he also, Krishna heard that Dantavakra had actually come to attack Mathura. So Krishna immediately went to Mathura in order to actually kill Dantavakra. And after killing Dantavakra, Krishna actually entered Vrindavan. He again went to Vrindavan, and then he again united with the residents of Vrindavan, and then he actually sent all the residents of Vrindavan back to the spiritual world. But this particular pastime of Krishna again going back to Vrindavan, uniting the residents of Vrindavan after the killing of Dantavakra, it is not narrated by Shukadeva Goswami in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And although Shukadeva Goswami was aware of these pastimes, because we especially come to know about this particular pastime of Krishna again going back to Vrindavan after the killing of Dantavakra and then sending all the residents of Vrindavan back to the spiritual world, we get this, we come to know about this pastime from Padma Puran Uttarakhand. And Jiva Goswami in his book Gopal Champu, he dedicates 9 chapters in which he describes the pastimes which Krishna performed in Vrindavan for 2 months after killing Dantavakra. But although when Sanatan Goswami and Sanatan Goswami has also mentioned this pastime, Rupa Goswami has also indicated this pastime in his works, but Shukadeva Goswami, contrary to the other acharyas, Sanatan Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Rupa Goswami, or contrary to what is mentioned in Padma Puran, he does not explicitly mention Krishna again returning to Vrindavan. Although he gives an indication of Krishna returning to Vrindavan, the same chapter, that Krishna, after performing some pastimes, he entered back Dwaraka, like that he mentions. And in the first canto, when Krishna's entrance to Dwaraka, the residents of Dwaraka, when Krishna comes to Dwaraka, residents of Dwaraka, they tell Krishna that whenever you go to Vrindavan, Mathura, we feel one moment in separation from you like one yuga. So they express their feelings to Krishna. But what is like that, but that verse also gives an indication that Krishna sometimes would return to Dwaraka. Yarhi Ambu Jaksha, like that verse goes. Whenever you would actually go to meet the Mathura Vasis or Vrindavan Vasis, we feel separation from you. We feel one moment of separation from you like one yuga. So Shukadeva Goswami just gives an indication of Krishna returning to Vrindavan. Especially he doesn't mention this pastime in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna returning to Vrindavan after the killing of Dantavakra.
Because the killing of Dantavakra happened just in the outskirts of Mathura, and after that Krishna returned to Vrindavan, and then he sent all the Vrajavasis back to the spiritual world. So why does he not narrate this pastime? In fact, before even we go into that reason, like when we consider Shukadev Goswami as a speaker of the Srimad Bhagavatam, like Shukadev Goswami is a person who is actually affected by the subject matter who he speaks. Like in the case of a, suppose that you are playing a lecture on a tape recorder. In the case of a tape recorder, so any time you can stop, you can make a pause and then you can fast forward, rewind. So you can do something like that. In the sense, like, tape recorder does not have any feeling towards like the sound vibration which is coming out of it. But in the case of Shukadev Goswami, he is not like a speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam, like a tape recorder, in the sense that who is not affected by the subject matter which he is speaking. The Shukadev Goswami, we get an understanding how Shukadev Goswami gets affected by the subject matter which he speaks in other sections of the Bhagavatam also. Like for example, like in the Ras Panchadhyay, when the gopis were actually in separation from Krishna, and then they sing this gopi geet, and then after that when Krishna returns to the gopis, so Shukadev Goswami uses one word to describe Krishna. So Shukadev Goswami uses the word shauri to describe Krishna. So why does he use the word shauri to describe Krishna? Because Shukadev Goswami was also angry with Krishna. Because Krishna had actually left the gopis and the middle of the forest. So Shukadev Goswami was taking the side of the gopis, and he is also a little angry with Krishna. And out of jealousy towards Krishna, he is calling Krishna by the word Shauri. By that what he indicates is that, oh, Krishna is a Kshatriya, and Kshatriyas are a little hard-hearted by nature. So Shukadev Goswami, in narrating that pastime, he is also affected by the feelings of the gopis who are actually experiencing great sorrow in separation from Krishna. And Shukadev Goswami, being a devotee of Vrindavan, he is the parrot of Srimati Radharani, and he is also feeling little anger towards Krishna, and then that's why he is indicating using the word Shauri. So definitely, when such a devotee of Vrindavan, the personal parrot of Srimati Radharani, he would definitely experience great spiritual feelings, great spiritual happiness in narrating the pastimes of Krishna's union with the Vrajavasis. So although Shukadev Goswami would experience great happiness and great ecstasy in narrating the Krishna's union with the Vrajavasis, why did he choose not to describe that particular pastime of Krishna going back to Vrindavan and sending all the residents of Vrindavan back to the spiritual world? So Vishnu Chakra Thakur gives an understanding. He says that Shukadev Goswami, he felt that in future he'll have to narrate the pastime of Krishna, he'll have to narrate the pastime of the Yadus, like having a fratricidal war, and then Yadus leaving this world in an inauspicious way. So Yadus are personal associates of Krishna and Dwaraka, and because of the curse of the Brahmanas curse them that your whole dynasty will be destroyed by a fratricidal war. So Yadus, apparently they left this world in a very inauspicious way by fighting and killing each other. So Shukadev Goswami, he will have to narrate this pastime later. And he felt, because Parikshit Maharaj is a devotee who is more attached to the Yadus than to the Vrajavasis. So Shukadev Goswami felt that if I narrate this particular pastime of Krishna sending back the residents of Vrindavan to the spiritual world, residents of Vrindavan had an auspicious ending. So Parikshit Maharaj, later when you would hear the pastime of Yadus disappearing this world in an inauspicious way,
Parikshit Maharaj would get a question, why did Krishna make the Yadus leave this world in an inauspicious manner, whereas Krishna actually sent the Vrajavasis from this world in an auspicious manner? So Parikshit Maharaj might get a doubt in Krishna. And that doubt in Krishna may further obstruct his journey to the spiritual world. So therefore, Sukadeva Goswami, in order to serve this devotee Parikshit Maharaj, so that he does not get a doubt in Krishna, he suppressed his own spiritual feelings. He suppressed his own spiritual happiness in narrating that pastime of Krishna again going back to Vrindavan. So here we see that Rukmini Devi suppressed her feelings in fear of separation from Krishna, and we have the example of Sukadeva Goswami, who suppressed his own spiritual feelings in order to render better service to a devotee Parikshit Maharaj. So we see this particular lesson from Rukmini Devi, and we see Krishna is actually mentioning that prastapito dvija upashruta satkatasya. Krishna is actually recollecting that because you heard authentic accounts about me from the great sages, you developed a great attraction towards me, and you sent a letter. Through that Brahmana to me. So this particular theme, which comes again and again, just spoken by many devotees, about how Rukmini Devi developed attraction towards Krishna simply by hearing about Krishna. In fact, the very first verse she wrote in that letter is that, Shrutva gunan bhumana sundara shinvatamte nirvishta karna vivarair haratongatapam rupam drishi drishimatam akilartalabam twayachuta vishati chittam apatrapam me. So Rukmini Devi said, O beauty of the world, bhumana sundara, Shrutva gunan bhumana sundara shinvatamte, simply by hearing about you, I have developed so much of attraction, simply by hearing about your beauty and hearing about your qualities. And I have become so shamelessly attracted towards you. And she says that when a person hears about your qualities, and when a person hears about your beauty and your qualities, then all the heat within the body is completely diminished. Haratonga tapam. The miseries of the body are completely diminished. In this material world, when a person sees the beauty of a material object, the heat within the body increases, the desire to exploit that person or the object. But in the case of Krishna's beauty, the heat within the body gets diminished. Haratonga tapam. So we see, especially I want to describe one particular verse which actually gives importance to hearing, which is spoken by Narada Muni to Prachina Barishad. So before I want to highlight this verse, I just want to give a background to this Narada Muni's preaching to Prachina Barishad. So if we see, in the case of Vyasdev and Narada Muni. So Vyasdev is a disciple of Narada Muni, and Vyasdev, he compiled all the Vedas and he wrote the Puranas, Vedanta Sutra, he wrote Mahabharata. But then he was feeling dissatisfied, and Narada Muni came and chastised him and told him to write Srimad Bhagavatam. So we can, in trying to understand Vyasdev and Narada Muni, we will try to get an understanding of this ninth offense to the holy name. The ninth offense to the holy name is to speak the glories of the holy name to the faithless.
So that is the ninth offense, the holy name. But there is one more part of this, there is other part of this offense which is not usually very much talked about, but Shivaram Maharaj mentions this other part of this offense in his book. He says that the ninth offense of the holy name is to teach the glories of the name, holy name to the faithless. But the converse of this injunction, the other part of the offense is that one must teach the glories of the holy name to the faithful. Or in other words, not speaking the glories of the holy name to the faithful is also an offense. Speaking the glories of the holy name to the faithless is an offense, and not speaking the glories of the holy name to the faithful is an offense. And he says, the gurus who collect disciples but fail in their duty to train them are offenders to both the holy name and the disciplic succession. So in other words, we get two principles from this particular point, two principles in preaching. One principle is that when a person is faithless, we cannot directly speak about the glories of the holy name. So first, we need to speak something by which that person gets some faith. We need to speak something by which we can connect to the person. That is one part of the preaching, the first part. But the other part of the preaching is that after connecting to the person, then we have to give the real stuff. Basically, we have to speak about the glories of the Lord in an uncompromising way. We have to speak about the glories of the holy name. And if we don't do the second part, then we are incomplete in our preaching. It's a very simple principle. Even in any field of teaching, like suppose a person is in level 1, and a person is in level 1, you cannot give the teachings of level 3. You cannot speak about maybe subjects of advanced mathematics like calculus to a 7th standard student. But when a person has come to level 3, if you keep speaking only the level 1 thing, then that is also wrong. If a person has already come to 12th standard or college, if you again keep speaking only the trigonometry, the basic trigonometry, then that is also wrong. So in that sense, so these are two principles of preaching, which is actually indicated by this ninth offense, the holy name. And when you see these two principles through this episode of Vyasadeva and Narada Muni. So in the case of Vyasadeva, in the first canto, we see Vyasadeva, he compiled all the Vedas, he wrote Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, and he wrote the Puranas, Mahabharata, etc. All these are because he wrote all these things because he could see that people in general are interested towards sense gratification. And few people are interested in Jnana Kanda, etc. So in order to, because he felt that they may not be immediately ready to actually take the glories of the Supreme Lord. So therefore, in order to tell them, okay, you enjoy sense gratification in a dharmic way, in one sense, in order to connect with them, he compiled all these Vedas, he wrote the Puranas, he wrote Mahabharata, in order to connect with the general mass of people who are actually generally attached to sense gratification. So in one sense, what he did was correct. He did the first part of the preaching, but the mistake was that after connecting to the people, he didn't give the real stuff of Srimad Bhagavatam. So because he didn't do the second part of the preaching, there he actually committed a mistake. So therefore he was dissatisfied. But if we see, on the other hand, if we see in the case of Narada Muni, how he followed both the principles in his preaching to Prachina Parishad. In the case of Prachina Parishad, or we can see in other examples also, but in the case of Prachina Parishad, he spoke an allegorical story of another king. Because Prachina Parishad himself is a king who is attached to Karmakanda rituals. So Narada Muni spoke the story of another king, another king called as Puranjan, who is also a very pious king attached to a pious way of life. so that he can connect with Prachina Barishat. And in fact, even in connecting with Prachina Barishat, in fact, that story was also, it is only filled with spiritual instructions. In one, it's like, he gave actually a, we can say he gave a spicy Krishna Katha to Prachina Barishat. Because Prachina Barishat was in a spicy category at that time. But even the spice which he used was also a healthy spice in the sense. The sense that, even that, because he tells at the end of the narration, he said, although I have spoken this story, it is actually only filled with spiritual instruction. Paroksha vada, he says that it is only filled with spiritual instruction. So, but after speaking that story, then if we see the last part of his preaching, 4th Canto, 29th chapter, so Narada Muni is uncompromisingly, he is speaking about the glories of the path of devotional service. Because at this time, Prachina Barishat has come to the non-spacey category. So he is speaking actually uncompromisingly. So in that sense, Narada Muni followed both the principles perfectly. So when he, in that particular section, when he is actually uncompromisingly speaking about the glories of the devotional service, he speaks a very beautiful verse in which he actually talks about the process of hearing. So he says, Yatra Bhagavata Rajan Sadavo Vishadashaya Bhagavat Gunanu Katana Shravana Vyagra Chetasaha Tasmin Mahan Mukarita Madhubicharitra Piyusha Shesha Sarita Parita Shravanti Taye Pibantya Vitrusho Nripagada Karnais Tanas Prushan Atha Ashanatrid Bayashoka Moha. So Narada Muni says, Yatra Bhagavata Rajan Sadavo Vishadashaya. So he says, where there are devotees with pure hearts and proper conduct, Sadavo Vishadashaya. Our Prabhupada says, the devotees with proper behavior, who are broad-minded in nature, who have proper conduct, where there are devotees with pure hearts and proper conduct, who are eager to hear discussions of the qualities of the Lord, Bhagavad Gunanu Katana Shravana Vyagra Chetasaha. In that place, profuse streams of nectar of the pastimes of the Lord, emanating from the mouths of the saintly devotees, which is the Mahaprasad of the devotees, flow everywhere. Tasmin Mahan Mukarita Madhubit Charitra Piyusha Shesha Sarita Parita Shravanti. Prabhupada gives an analogy in that purport. He says that a businessman is always eager to accumulate wealth. Wherever there is an opportunity to get good business, to earn wealth, he is actually looking for that opportunity. So similarly, a devotee is eager to actually hear Krishna Katha wherever it is available. And then he says, especially here, Piyusha Shesha Sarita Parita Shravanti. So here is explained, the Krishna Katha which is emanating from the mouths of the devotees, it is actually the remnants of those devotees. Shesha means leftover. Lord Balram is called a Sesha because he only actually tastes that which is the remnants of the Lord Krishna. So Shesha means Mahaprasad. So the Krishna Katha spoken by the devotees is non-different from the Mahaprasad of the devotees. So then he says that Tana Sprishant Ashana Trid Bayashoka Moha. He says that when a person comes in that association, when a person hears that Mahaprasad, what is the, when a person tastes that Mahaprasad in the form of hearing Krishna Katha, what is the result of that? One becomes freed from hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion and fear. Baya Shoka Moha. And he says that Tana Sprishant Ashana Trid Baya Shoka. says that when a person hears those pastimes with sturdy ears, nripa gada karnais, means like with a sturdy ear, with a feeling that I should not actually miss even a one drop of nectar, even one drop of that nectar of Krishna Katha should not spill out of the cup of my ear. So he is very careful that he is holding the ear in a very sturdy manner so that not even a single drop does not flow out. Then one becomes freed from hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion and fear. So especially in this verse, it is explained that Piyusha Shesha, that means that Krishna Katha is actually non-different from the Mahaprasad of the devotees. So, but the difference between the Mahaprasad in the form of the actual Prasad, in the form of the food remnants of Krishna or the devotees, and the Mahaprasad in the form of Krishna Katha, the difference is that in the case of Mahaprasad, food remnants, we have two principles. Sometimes we fast, we are supposed to observe fasting and we are supposed not to overeat. Even though it may be Mahaprasad. But these two principles don't apply in the case of actually this Mahaprasad of Krishna Katha, because Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, one has to regularly hear, in fact, one has to daily hear, and there is no principle of actually, oh, one should not overeat this Mahaprasad in the form of Krishna Katha. And in the case of the, like, Mahaprasad in the form of Krishna Katha, that is actually available that is available for people, even for all times to come in the future, even after disappearance of the devotee. Where the books of Srila Prabhupada, which are actually, one says Mahaprasad of Srila Prabhupada, that is available even after disappearance of Srila Prabhupada. But the Mahaprasad remnants of the great devotee, that is available only at that time. And in the case of the Mahaprasad remnants, that may be how many people can actually partake. A few people, which is a small quantity. But when a devotee is speaking Krishna Katha, it can actually, many people can hear. Many people can hear. Thousands of people can hear. So that is the Mahaprasad in the form of this Krishna Katha. So Rukmini Devi, because she developed attraction by hearing Krishna Katha, that she actually sent that letter to Krishna. And another thing which I want to mention in regard to this pastime is that, so Rukmini Devi, she was feeling great sorrow when Rukmi was killed by Balramji. But she actually suppressed her feelings. So, we had discussed this point sometime back in the Bhagavatam class also, but I just want to add this point, some more things in this particular lesson. So, if you see this character of Bhishmaka, Rukmini Devi and Rukmi. It is explained in the case of Bhishmaka, it's a verse which describes Bhishmaka was Vidhi Vidam Varaha. Vidhi Vidam Varaha means he was outstanding in the knowledge of the scriptures. And Bhishmaka rewarded the Brahmanas profusely by giving charity just before the marriage of Rukmini Devi, when she was about to get married to Sishupal. So Rukmini, he was very expert in all the rules, but ultimately, although he was expert in so many rules and regulations, but he was carried away by the affection towards Rukmi. Putra Sneha Vashanuga. That's what the word used in the Bhagavatam. He was swayed by the affection towards Rukmi, so therefore, he actually desired to marry Rukmini with Sishupat. And Rukmini Devi also had affection towards Rukmi. Because the verse describes that she was actually feeling great sorrow. But then the difference between Bhishmaka and Rukmi is that Rukmi was not swayed by the affection towards Rukmi. Rukmini Devi was not swayed by the affection towards Rukmi. And she actually chose to get married towards Krishna in the beginning. And also even when Rukmi was killed, Rukmini Devi was not swayed by the affection towards Rukmi. and Rukmini Devi suppressed her feelings. So we, all of us, we have in our life, Bhishmaka, in fact, it is, Bhagavatam describes all the residents of Vidarbha, including Bhishmaka, he also wanted to actually marry Rukmini Devi with Krishna. But because he was swayed with affection towards Rukmi, he decided to arrange for a marriage of Rukmini with Shishupal. So all of us, we have Krishna on our side and we also have Rukmi in our life. Means like, we may have affection towards Krishna and we may also have affection towards Rukmi. So depending on which affection is greater, and that whether our affection towards Rukmi is strong or not, it will be tested at a certain point of time. Just like yesterday, Mukund Mahaprabhu narrated that pastime that there's one disciple, Prabhupada, actually, when the whole world was actually celebrating man's landing on moon, Prabhupada was boldly, like, to tell at that time boldly about man level landed on the moon, that requires a deep faith in the Shastra. But one devotee was actually, Prabhupada's personal servant was like very much disturbed by that. So he was actually serving Srila Prabhupada and he was also having Rukmi in his life. Means like Rukmi in his life was actually advancement, that he was believing that, oh, man is advancing in science. So we may, we may have taken to Krishna consciousness, we may also have Rukmi in the form of like, we may be having the faith, oh, we have made so much of technological advancement. We may be having Rukmi in the form of like attachment to modern education. Or we may be having Rukmi in the form of maybe some other demigod worship, some other paths. So all those attachment towards Rukmi will be tested at a certain point of time. But Rukmini Devi, she came out victorious in the test. Of course, Rukmini Devi is the supreme goddess of fortune, it's just a pastime. But we are just taking lesson from the point of view of a sadhaka. So in that sense, there may be like certain non-Vedic ideas which we may also be attached to in our life, apart from ideas from the Vedic scriptures. Like, there is one beautiful verse which comes in the 8th canto, which gives some idea that when Vamana Devi is speaking to Bali Maharaj, Vamanandevi tells to Bali Maharaj, you are indeed exalted because you have got advisors for your present life in the form of the Brahmanas from Bhrigu dynasty, and you also have advisors for your future life in the form of Prahlad Maharaj. What Vamanandevi is saying is that, who is actually a fortunate person? A fortunate person is one who has got good guides in his life. So, when we talk about guides, we need guides for two aspects of our life. One aspect is guides for our future life, guides for who can actually guide us how to transcend this material world and go to the spiritual world. And we also need guides to live in this world. So what Vamanandevi is saying is that you are indeed exalted because both of your guides are Vedic authorities. Your guides for going back to the spiritual world for your future life is none other than Prahlad Maharaj, the pure devotee of the Lord. And your guides for present life or how to live in this world is the Brahmanas coming from Bhrigu dynasty, who are also Vedic authorities. But if we try to introspect in our life, so the guides for future life to transcend this world is the pure devotees or Srimad Bhagavatam. So there no other book can replace Srimad Bhagavatam for transcendence. There cannot be any other book which can replace Srimad Bhagavatam to give guidance for transcendence for pure devotional service. But if we see deeply for getting guidance for living in this world, When we talk about living in this world, it involves aspects like time management, maybe leadership, like so many other aspects like health or so many this thing. But if we introspect for living in this world, we may be actually, we may be taking shelter of certain non-Vedic authorities in the form of Rukmi. So, of course, being in a city like, living in a city like Bombay, we may have, in Kali Yuga, we may have to adopt like certain non-Vedic system because we have no other alternative. I don't actually disagree. I don't disagree with that point. But the point is that, like, are we taking shelter of those non-Vedic authorities? Like, for example, okay, for Srimad, for guidance, we may be consulting Srimad Bhagavatam for transcending this world. But for time management and leadership, we may be considering certain modern self-help books. We don't know, like whether they are coming from Vedic sources or not. Some of them may be even eating like a cow's meat. If you extend that analogy which we described before, that devotees are speaking, when you are hearing the speeches given by the devotees, we are actually tasting the Mahaprasad of those devotees. So similarly, when we are accepting the theories of these modern self-help books, those authors may be some cow flesh eaters, maybe we are taking the Mahaprasad. So we have to introspect that, like, are we actually taking shelter of those actually authorities? So in the form, in the sense that, like, for example, even in the case of Bhishmaka, he could have lived with Rukmi, but at the same time he could have disagreed with Rukmi and arranged for the marriage of Rukmini with Krishna. So similarly, because there is no option, we may live in the system, we may adopt the system of the materialist because we have no other alternative, but we should never give our heart to the system of the materialist. Just like in the case of Prahlad Maharaj, he had to study in the school of Shandar Namarka. He had no option, but his heart was not given to that school. So we have to actually introspect that whether we are giving our heart to these authorities, whether we are giving our heart to the system of the disciples of Rukmi. So if we are giving our heart to the disciples of Rukmi, then it is like suppose you are going in a river, the two boats are there. Your one leg is on one boat, and another leg is on another boat. And both the boats are starting to move. How long can you keep both the legs on, how long can you go on like that? After a certain time, you have to take out one leg from another boat. So if we see deeply, many times, like even in the present day leaders, maybe the previous government, they didn't have any sympathy towards cow protection. Maybe the present government may have some sympathy towards cow protection, they banned cow slaughter, etc. But we also see that their other feet is strongly grounded in industrialization. If you study the history, if we try to study deeply, that cow protection and industrialization, they go ill together. Because traditionally in all the villages there used to be like gochar and bhumi for actually grazing land for the cows. So when the industrialization started, then they started giving the grazing land to the, which was meant for the grazing land for the industries. So then what happened? Then people were finding very difficult to maintain the cows. Because when the grazing land is there, the maintenance cost of the cows actually goes down. Now without the grazing land, they have to actually buy so much of fodder. So then people are, the maintenance cost increases, and then because of that, there is a certain helplessness that they are actually sending, they had to send the cows for the slaughter. So in that sense, so on the one hand, they may be talking about cow protection, they may be actually banning, but on the other hand, going to different countries to increase the industrialization, which is actually indirectly connected with the cow slaughter. So in that sense, one leg is on one boat, another leg is on another boat of materialism. And the boat of materialism may appear very nice, but it has a deep hole. and if we put both the legs on this on, to the boat of materialism, at a certain point you will actually sink in the river. So in that sense, the boat of materialism represents the Rukmi, and the other boat represents the boat or the system given by Krishna. And although we may not have to have much alternatives, but although we may adopt the system of the materialist, but we can never give our heart to the system of the materialist, just like following the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj and following the footsteps of Rukmini Devi, that she had that affection towards Rukmi, but she never she did not allow that affection to actually come in the way of her devotion towards Krishna. And that's what we see in this particular verse. So I'll stop here. Grantana Srimad Bhagavatam ki chai, Shila Prabhupada ki chai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki chai.